Okay, let's restart. We're now moving to agenda paper 18, which will be our last discussion today.
Right. Thank you. Good morning. The Interpretations Committee received a request to clarify the interaction between the use of Level 1 inputs and the portfolio exception set out in IFRS 13, Fair Value Measurement. And the submission received, you can find it in Appendix 1 to the paper. Appendix 2 to the paper includes all the requirements in IFRS 13 dealing with this matter for your information. The portfolio exception in IFRS 13 intends to align the valuation of financial instruments with an entity's risk management practices. And the portfolio exception also intends to maintain existing guidance in IAS 39. The term exception refers to the fact that, strictly speaking, the portfolio exception does not aim to measure the fair value of individual assets or the fair value of individual liabilities, but it aims to measure the net risk exposure arising from a group of financial assets and financial liabilities. And this is illustrated in paragraph 6 of the paper. The portfolio exception is an accounting policy decision, and to be eligible to use the portfolio exception, an entity needs to fulfill specific conditions that are stated also in the standard, specifically in paragraph 49 of the standard. So apart from aligning the valuation of financial instruments to the net risk management procedures or policies of an entity, the portfolio exception was also permitted for practical reasons, and this is why, when it was drafted, when those requirements were drafted, they were drafted with high concentration of unquoted derivatives in mind. That means level 2, level 3 financial instruments. And the portfolio exception also aimed to avoid systems modifications. And all of those reasons why the portfolio exception was permitted are explained in more detail in paragraph 9 of the paper. The question that we have received, or the question that has been raised, is how to reconcile the unit of measurement, which is the net risk exposure, with the unit of account, which is the individual financial assets or financial liabilities included in the portfolio, and in particular when those financial instruments have a level 1 price. And the question arises because if we do have level 1 price available, there are some specific paragraphs in the standard that tell us that we should be using them without adjustment. And those paragraphs are paragraph 69, 77, and 80 of the standard. So basically the question is how to reconcile those paragraphs with the portfolio exception if the portfolio consists of financial instruments that are level 1 instruments. And we can see this through an example. And the example is in paragraph 13. The example, in particular, have financial assets and financial liabilities, but those instruments are the same instruments. And this is relevant because in that case, the net risk exposure would match with the net position of the portfolio because those financial instruments are the same. And the question is, if we have such a portfolio, then what would IFRS 13 require? Does IFRS 13 allow an entity to measure the net risk exposure using the level 1 prices, or would IFRS 13 require that each financial asset and each financial liability to be measured in accordance to their individual level 1 prices? And the effect of applying the portfolio exception or not is illustrated in the table that we have in paragraph 16 of the paper. Before going to the numbers of this table, it's worth noting that our understanding is that the prevalence of portfolios fully made up of level 1 instruments is lower than other types of portfolios. And from a very limited outreach performed, we have been informed that it's unusual to see portfolio exception being used for portfolios consisting of level 1 instruments. except for a specific example in the case of trade-dated accounted purchases and trade-dated accounted sales when they refer to the same instruments, for example, equity instruments. And in that specific case, we have been said that the portfolio exception is being used. However, the volumes were not normally high, and the difference between using or not the portfolio exception would not have been significant. So if we go now through the numbers in the table in paragraph 16, we can see on the left-hand side of the table, we see the measurement resulting when we do apply the portfolio exception. And this measurement would also match with view A, which is one of the interpretations. And what we would have here is that the measurement would result in basically applying the bid, the most representative bid price, to the net position, which is 500 financial assets. So 10,000 minus 9,500, the net position, the net asset position of 500 would be measured at its most representative bid price, 99, resulting in a measurement of 40,500. This would be then the measurement applying the portfolio exception. And basically this approach would prioritize or the intention that in the portfolio exception was aiming to match or to align the risk management policies with the valuation of financial instruments. However, we can see that this approach would mean that the financial assets and the financial liabilities would not be recognized in the statement of financial position at their level one prices. If we go then to the right-hand side of the table, we have that the resulting measurement would be the one that would be obtained by not using the portfolio exception. And in that case, what we would have is that each financial asset and each financial liability would be measured based on the level one prices. The resulting measurement would be 30,500. That would match with view B in the paper. And basically this view would prioritize the level one inputs that we have. So this view would prioritize the paragraphs that we mentioned before, 69, 77, and 80 of IFRS 13. There is also another view, which is view C, which would basically say that an entity would choose to apply the portfolio exception if it maximizes value to the entity. And in the example that we just discussed, using the portfolio exception would maximize the value for the entity, and this is what the entity would choose then. So basically, this is the different measurements that we would obtain by applying different requirements in IFRS 13. And what would have been the measurement under IS 39? For that, we have to go to paragraphs 23 and 24 of the paper. And again, then, from a very limited outreach performed, our understanding is that for that specific type of portfolios, meaning that we have the exact financial instruments in there, we have financial assets and financial liabilities, but that they are the same financial instruments, entities applying IS 39 would have also arrived at measurements that are similar to the ones that we explain when the portfolio exception is being applied. And basically then, based on the background information included in this paper relating to the portfolio exception and the specific requirements in IFRS 13 that we have stated, the question is whether the guidance in IFRS 13 relating to the interaction between the level one inputs and the portfolio exception is sufficiently clear. And I would then pass the word to the IFRIC members.
One observation, we tried to shy away from sufficiently clear.
Okay.
That gets us back into the old concern of, well, if it was clear, why did somebody ask us a question in the first place? So, Andrew?
That's a helpful analysis by the staff. And I rather took the paper to be saying, in paragraph 10, it's not clear, but the staff are saying it's early days, so let's wait. But I thought the staff themselves had, from the analysis, it's self-evident it's not entirely clear, and so you know, I would favour getting some resolution, some clarity in the position. And there were actually two issues in the submission. The first one is the unit account around investment in subsidiaries, which I understand the board is doing something about. So if it's doing something about that one, why can't it do something about this one?
Hello?
I guess from our point of view, I'm applying the equivalent in US GAAP that we thought it was, you know, we thought the portfolio exemption applied, and I think most of the people we know apply that. We don't actually get to a different position. I don't think many people that do that without applying it, though, so it sort of became a moot point because the P times Q and then applying a bid-ask adjustment on the individual asset actually gets you to the same place as treating it as a portfolio for us, and I think for most of the people we know. I understand the question of the old bulk of block discount question, but I don't think in practice that is a huge issue. I would say the portfolio exception is how you manage the business, and to apply it, to move away from using it as a portfolio is you'd have to sort of provide that all the background for your IFRS calculations would be different from how you're actually managing it. You manage your pool of derivatives as a portfolio. You get to your net open position, you value that. And I thought the portfolio exception was really in place to deal with that and to allow people to continue with their normal practice and the practice they've done, you know, IS 39, US GAAP, etc. So it's just consistent.
Marantz?
I like Andrew, I support providing clarification at this stage. I think going with UA is sensible, and I think, in fact, you are UA, Charlotte.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I am UA too, because it is managed on the net risk exposure. Well, it's valued for the net risk exposure. And if there is some clarification that is provided, there is a side issue that would be important to address is any blockage factor into the measurement. That is, here you take a simple size, so you only have a few instruments. But when you have several instruments, does the size of the portfolio has an effect on the valuation? Do you consider the size, and does it have an effect on the net position? Do you take that into account or not? And I do believe that this is also an issue in practice. And so if you address the portfolio issue for the measurement of based on net risk exposure, I think it would be worth addressing also the blockage factor issue at the same time.
John, Sue, did you want to come in?
Yeah, just clarify something on that. So IFRS 13 already says that you should take into account size if it's a characteristic of the asset. So would you be looking for confirmation that you would take into account the size of the total net risk exposure as a characteristic of that net exposure?
That's an interesting observation, Sue.
Because correct, I'm not sure that was what the board meant. So I think that's...
Because correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought size is a characteristic of an asset. So, for example, if you owned U.S. Treasuries, doesn't matter how many you own.
Yeah, I know. And so that's why it's...
I think that's been the tension.
Yes, exactly. So the question, that's why I asked for the clarification, because if you think that the asset that you're valuing is 500 individual financial assets in the example, then you would say that the individual asset is the asset and you're valuing 500 of them. But I think what the VUA people are saying is that the asset that you are valuing is the block of 500, and because it's the block of 500, they would say that a characteristic of that asset is its size.
Yes.
And what do you think?
Well, Mariella and I may have different views. I, given the discussion that the board had, I think it comes down to whether the portfolio exception was just saying, don't worry about the 9,500 assets and liabilities that offset, value the 500, but value the 500 as if you just held 500 directly, which would be sort of P times Q-ish type view of the world, or whether the portfolio exception was going an extra step and saying because it's in a portfolio, the thing you're valuing is the whole 500 as a unit, and so you value it differently to the 500 individual
items. So
you
don't do P times Q.
Yes, and I think that's where the question's arising. What exactly did the portfolio exception mean? Was it just an exception to the 9,500 that are offset in this example, or did it actually change the way the 500 were being measured? I think some of the staff think that we were just saying measure the 500 in the normal way. Other members of the staff think that the 500 was being measured as a block. And we went back to the staff, to the original board papers, and that sort of specific aspect wasn't actually fleshed out in the paper. So I think if we were to try and clarify this, we'd probably need to go back again like we've had to do with the how do you value a subsidiary, et cetera, and ask the board, did they really mean it had to be P times Q if it was level one, or was the exception meant to be a broader thing? Which is why you're raising it.
Guido?
Maybe I'm misunderstanding what we're discussing here, but let's assume, as in the example, that you have, I think, 9,500 and assets and 9,000 liabilities, and then you just look at the net position, which is 500 assets in my example. And then you would say, well, if I would apply this, not P times Q, but it's a blockage, doesn't make a lot of sense to me because you are not looking at the 9,000 other assets that you have. So the blockage that you're looking at is really a small amount, just 500.
It could still be a big number, depends.
Right,
yeah.
But
that 500 could be big relative to the daily trading volume, for example.
I agree, but that's not what is there in reality. You have 9,500. So if you apply the blockage, then you would have to look at the 9,500. So I see a lot of problems with using the blockage factor here. Just looking at the 500 doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, that's the reason a slightly different
reason.
That's
why you asked the question.
P times Q was such an article of principle.
Exactly. Mm.
Throughout the discussions of this project and of the FASB predecessor to it.
That's why I think it is P times Q, but I think there's differences.
But I think then we would have to say that it's not sufficiently clear if the staff don't agree. I'm not going to put Mariella on the spot, but John?
I think the main point for me was I don't think the board discussed it that explicitly.
And that, if that's the case, then definitely. John?
I think Sue has expressed exactly the question that I think needs to be answered, which is not the question that's dealt with in the paper. So like Andrew, I think that there's a whole lot of things raised in the submission and identified in paragraph 10, which actually are at the heart. So to me, to take this piece by piece and the committee do some and the board do some is not the way to tackle these issues, because I think they're all to some extent interrelated with each other. But I think Sue's expressed the question that I think needs to be answered.
Mm-hmm. Sandy?
Yeah, I had a question. The actual presentation of the 10 and the 9,500 is gross, right?
Yes.
Yes.
So you would then take the 99 and apply it times the 10,000 and the 9,500 in this example?
Well, the allocation is not something that the standard is explicit on, but what we have considered in here is that you would then 950, you would measure them at mid-price, both financial assets and financial liabilities, and the remaining 49,500, you would measure them the remaining 500, you would measure them at 99. So basically, the portfolio exception would tell you that the net position of 500 needs to be measured at 99. How do you split this into financial assets and financial liabilities on a gross basis?
Right.
Is not explicit in the standard. But what we have assumed here in the table is that financial assets of 9,500 would go away with financial liabilities of 9,500, and what would be left is this 500 again. And basically, those financial assets would add to 999,500, and those financial liabilities would add to 950,000
as stated in the table. So those would be the gross amounts for financial assets and financial liabilities. And
so
those
amounts. The gross amount is which? I get what you're saying for the calculation, but on the financial statements, it's going to be 99,000,
yes.
999,500.
Yes. And 950,000.
Okay.
Yep.
That's your presentation.
Yep.
Yes.
13 just says do it in a systematic way. It doesn't dictate
no.
that way.
Okay.
Charlotte, and then I want to bring in Joanna.
Yeah, I mean, the only point I want to make sure is that if you do agree to take this onto the agenda, I think it has to be done as a jointly with the FASB because it is a united standard, and to have a difference would just be difficult, to say the least.
At this extent, because we have performed limited outreach, we are not very certain about how widespread this issue is. So we don't know how many of those identical instruments, level one instruments, do we have in portfolios. So how?
It's a wise.
I ask that question to my people.
Uh-huh.
I say, yeah, it is an issue. And you may have many in some portfolios, the level one instruments in those portfolios.
Probably applies to a fairly small proportion of entities, but in those entities, you know, they may have it thousands of times.
Yeah. I wouldn't say it was an issue, though. I think the question is most of those entities are quite happy to be what they're doing constantly.
Mary Ellen.
When there is diversity.
Right.
The actual practice is prevalent, it's a different question.
Well, certainly if the practice isn't what the board wanted it to be, though, we ought to know that. Unpleasant as that might be.
No, I'm just saying, I was just asking the actual criteria, whether there was diversity in treatment.
Yeah. Mariella, refresh me about history. Did the FASB have a portfolio exception?
Yeah.
Prior to
our
project, or did they add it in response to something we did?
They used the
value in use.
They
had the value in use premise, which resulted in a similar treatment from what I understand. But in the final version of the standard, they've got the same portfolio.
Well, I understand they have the same thing now. I just was wondering about the sequence of events.
Yeah, that came from a value in use premise, which meant that it was applied this way in practice from what I understand. Yeah.
Okay.
There was a portfolio exception. It wasn't exactly the same, but my understanding, very high level, is that it accomplished about the same thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So they might have actually more experience with this than we do.
But from what we have heard, they don't have queries coming to them. And
I saw that in the paper, that they haven't
done.
Scott, did you want to come back in? No. Okay. Joanna?
Well, my initial reaction when I read this was that as said here in paragraph 25, we don't know whether there will be divergence, and as Mariella has just said, she doesn't know whether there is, and therefore we should do nothing and just have a watching brief. It's a very nice technical problem, and it obviously is a technical problem, as has been shown by the discussion between staff members as much as anything else, as to what to do about it. But I do wonder, when we have agenda criteria for a purpose, as to whether or not it is the best use of our and the board's time. And despite the fact that, as Andrew, I think when he first started, said, well, they're obviously, it's not clear, so maybe we should provide clarification. That's a very nice to have, but as you said right at the beginning of the meeting yesterday, Wayne, we can't do everything and can't clarify everything unless it really is an issue, and I don't know, and Mariella, I think, has said, and nobody knows because it hasn't come in yet, as to whether this really is an issue. So I still would, unless Mariella can tell me that this is going to be a short, sharp fix, which, and not use a lot of resources, et cetera, I would actually not do anything because I don't think it meets our agenda criteria.
Her comment was she would do nothing right now other than wait and watch. I think that's accurate, Joanna.
That's correct.
John?
I mean, we did have a discussion at a previous meeting about whether the role of the committee is to prevent divergent practice emerging. And I think there was a view expressed that where we thought divergent practice would emerge, the committee should have a role rather than waiting for it to emerge and then doing something about it. So I think you can expect divergent practice will emerge in this area.
Mm. Yeah, that's sort of contrary to what Charlotte said, which is that practice is settled on an answer. It may not be the answer that the board wanted it to settle on, in which case that's equally. Let me suggest this. I think a couple of people said the real issue is the blockage issue. And that deserves a public hearing at the board. That's not one that I would suggest we deal with in small group meetings, unless, Sue, you have a different view. So I do think that we at a minimum need to show this issue to the board and let them decide. We've held the discussion. Staff can report on the outcome of that discussion. That we should not accept or reject at this point. We ought to ask the board whether it wants to do something, because this does point to something where people can reach, I think, diametrically different positions on the same standard. Andrew? You disagree?
No, I don't disagree. I just, you used the word blockage factor, and I don't think this is actually about a blockage factor. It's about what's the unit evaluation, isn't it? Because you can't use a blockage factor. It's about what is the unit evaluation. Is it 500 or is it 500 individual units?
Yeah, it's what's being measured. Yes.
Yeah. So allowing a blockage factor. It's about what's the unit evaluation.
Yeah, it's really how far was a portfolio exception going in creating an exception.
Yeah. I guess, Andrew, my concern was, okay, I understand that the unit evaluation is 500. Now, 500 times what? And if it's a different answer than you would get for 500 individuals, it does seem to me you've introduced a blockage factor of some sort. And if that's what the board intended, let's get that out. But
the board did discuss blockage factors on level ones.
Well, they said you can't do it.
Yeah, it said you can't do it.
Yeah, so the question is, if you've got a portfolio, because if you were valuing the whole 500 as a net position as a whole, is it different to measuring 500 individual items where you're constrained by P times Q? That's the question. Did we really mean that we didn't mean P times Q anymore because you were valuing a portfolio?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's where the questions arise. Yes, because that whole thing doesn't get traded in an active market.
Patricia, I know you disagreed with the portfolio exception anyway, so I don't know if you want to add anything at this point.
All I can express is my view, and my view certainly is that it should be the individual security, not a portfolio that doesn't have a level one value. That would be my view.
And we, for the record, note that that is your individual view, not the corporate view of the board. Okay, does anybody have a problem with my proposal that we take this up to the board, raise it with them? I do think it's their problem. In a sense, it's not ours. Okay. Anything else, Mariella? Sue?
No.
Okay. Unless my sleep-deprived brain is mistaken, we're through. Motion to adjourn is in order.
No.
Seconded, noted, closed. Thank you. Joanna, thank you for dialing in.
Thank you.